Blackbird scratched on the mill house floor. 4 and 20 blackbirds scratched on the mill house floor. Watching a pair of blackbirds, a pair of blackbirds more. 4 and 20 blackbirds scratched on the mill house floor. One blackbird to the other, you must be my queen. So one blackbird to the other said, so you must be my queen. Well, the other replied in turn, well, sure enough, you're my king. 4 and 20 blackbirds and two began to sing. Yeah, the rhyming, it was through. 4 and 20 blackbirds had rhymed that whole night through. Fly away to blackbirds with nothing left to prove.
Okay, let's review. So on the way over here, freeway backed up for miles. Supposed to meet our lovely intern, Joy. Hi, Joy. There you go. Ahead. Your mic was on. Go ahead. All right. Let's see. Okay. Everybody has messed with everything in here. This is beautiful. Okay, try it again. Now let's hear you.
Good morning.
See, there we go.
Oh, that worked.
Okay, we are being bedeviled from the start, but we're going to talk about everything. We're going to violate every rule and rate. We're going to talk about every single mistake and mishap, and then we'll free ourselves of that. And they'll have a great show. So, anyways, freeway backed up for miles. And so then I thought, okay, I'm not only going to not be there early enough to meet Joy before the show is planned, will I be there for the show? Get to the station, finally scrambling, sweating, stressing, and then the door is locked. A brand new policy that's supposed to not affect 9 o'clock shows, but apparently did. So, frantically ring the doorbell to get our lovely previous host, Serena Sharp, to let us in. No luck. Then calling her on the air to finally get some action, because there didn't really seem to be any options. And then all the mics are turned every which way so that you're speaking into one that isn't actually the one that's indicated as on. And then when you have Joy, try to say hello. Same thing. Wrong mic. Okay, so I think that's it. Let's clear the decks. This is Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine. Streaming live on the internet at KUCI.org. And the whole enterprise, the whole shebang, the whole enchilada, the whole nine yards is broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine, home, as we always must emphasize on an animal show, of the anteaters, folks. That's right, the mighty anteaters, the intimidating anteaters. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And I absolutely urge you to use that number. Call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy. I'm telling you, we love, love, love to get calls. And even after a crazy, stressful start like this morning, we're still eminently nice here. No one ever gets beat up or criticized or hassled on the air when they call in. It's all very nice and friendly. So give us a shout if you still, despite those reassurances, don't want to call in, or you're online and that's the only line you got in the house or whatever. You can IM us. We got our AOL Instant Messenger up and running here. The screen name, perhaps not surprisingly, is Talking Animals. So you can send us a comment, a question, or whatever that way. And less immediate ways, of course, are emailing us at talkinganimals@aol.com or by way of our website, talkinganimals.net. Again, that's .net, folks. Make no mistake, it's .net. All right. So, before we move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp, the aforementioned, if I may say aforementioned, Serena Sharp, for another huge, hopping, hot topic-laden edition of the Serena Sharp Show. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. But we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. We aim for a spirited balance of these elements, as you can readily glean by visiting our also aforementioned. How often can you mention aforementioned twice in like a minute's time? Again, only here at Talking Animals. Anyways, the aforementioned website is talkinganimals.net. Where just about every show we've ever broadcast is archived, and there's cool synopses and a bunch of other stuff. But more to the point, you can see by looking at that, or having listened before, or simply just taking my word for it, if that's possible at this point, that the heart of the program is the interview we conduct each week with some notable inhabitant of some province of the animal world. Today, our guest is Paul Watson, a truly legendary figure in the animal world who co-founded Greenpeace, and went on to found the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. His lifelong activism defending all creatures of the sea has been recognized globally. In 2000, for example, Time magazine named him one of the environmental heroes of the 20th century. And Captain Watson's efforts to protect marine life have meant almost constant international travel, yet perhaps his chief concern remains the commercial seal hunt, or as you'll find probably he refers to it, the seal slaughter. In his native Canada, the largest mass slaughter of marine mammals in the world. So there will be much to discuss when Paul Watson joins us in a few minutes here on Talking Animals. Meanwhile, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news. And I want to remind you of the phone number one more time to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals. Not only this week's animal news items, but any other animal topic you care to discuss, an announcement of an event coming up, maybe a benefit for an animal-related organization, something of that kind, observations in the animal world, any news items that you've spotted that you think we should be discussing and maybe haven't, all that would be most welcome. 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Turning now to interesting and or important developments recently in animal news. Typically these are local, regional, national, sometimes international animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight. And within you'll have to get your comments on and discuss. We also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. Having said all that and rambled on and slowly perhaps calmed down from the inauspicious start to the morning, let's talk turkey, as it were. Produced by the award-winning Talking Animals Rip and Read News Department, I just want to quickly say, perhaps as one of the last people on the planet, among the last, I finally saw the March of the Penguins Friday night. And boy, is it everything everybody's been saying and writing and whatever. It's really, really great. I mean, there are some rough moments for those of us sissies in terms of, you know, bad things happening to animals, even in the midst of some really glorious, beautiful things happening. But really amazing piece of filmmaking. So if you haven't seen it and you're in that ever diminishing size group, I would recommend it heartily. So there you go. And I had other things I was going to say about important journalists who have passed recently, but I just don't know that we can do that. But I do want to at least nod to Peter Jennings and, on a more local and perhaps more personal level, David Shaw. Okay, so let's start off with almost it has to be the lead story this week. The first cloned dog is a 1 in 1,000 success. All right, now, Joy, anytime you want to jump in with any comments or...
I'm getting ready to jump.
Okay, cool. Awesome. So we'll just start off reading a bit of this. I'm sure it'd be hard to have not heard this or read this or something. But researchers in South Korea have produced the first cloned dog, a frisky Afghan hound puppy, in a scientifically daunting feat eagerly anticipated by scientists and pet owners alike. Snuppy, short for Seoul National University Puppy, was grown from an embryo containing DNA from the ear of a male hound selected for his gentle and docile nature, said Woo-Suk Wang, one of the lead researchers. The black, white, and tan puppy, now 3 months old, was the sole survivor among more than 1,000 cloned embryos that were transferred into surrogate mothers. Cloning experts were impressed that even one healthy dog was created, even as teams around the world have cloned mice, rabbits, pigs, cows, cats, and one horse. The eccentricities of the canine reproductive system have made it exceptionally difficult to add man's best friend to that list. Companies that plan to offer dog cloning services were quick to herald the achievement, published today in the journal Nature. Sorry. So it goes on to say other things, but any thoughts, comments on that, Joy?
Well, a little bit of backstory on this cloning is that it actually takes a tremendous amount of failed dogs to get one living dog.
Right. The percentages are very... very small, and also for some of us, because, you know, as this article notes here, and it's a much longer piece that we don't, you know, need to get into at the moment, but there's certainly been other animals that have been cloned in the past, but when you get into, to me at least, to dogs and cats, a number of people have already, of course, pointed this out in the immediate wake of this announcement. But among the things that are troubling about that is there are so many dogs and cats in shelters and elsewhere that need homes and need to be adopted. So to me, the fact that you are creating, cloning a new one, whether you're hoping to duplicate the family dog or a beloved cat or whatever, just seems right away just, again, troubling at best. So anyway, interesting story, and there are some... things on this, including the president of the Humane Society of the United States, Wayne Pacelle, wrote a cool op-ed piece that appeared, I think, nationally, but I saw it, I think, in the L.A. Times on August 5th, so you may want to check that out online. And but if you have any thoughts or comments on that, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And you know what? Let's skip ahead right now to our little quiz, because... we lost some valuable news moments with all the shenanigans, and I want to make sure we get this in and then get, at least hit a few more news items. So, I think you know how this works. It's a true-false question. The first person who calls in will have their choice of various fabulous prizes, including Talking Animals merchandise, one kind or another, Talking Animals t-shirt, sweatshirt, coffee mugs, and... if you're wondering, well, what does that exactly look like? Well, it looks very much like the logo on TalkingAnimals.net. So it's the cool little cat and the elephant with the microphone and stuff. It's very neat. So those are possibilities. We've got books, either from guests in the past or guests in the future. And I always have to point out that in the latter category would be Shirley MacLaine, who hasn't joined us yet, but I haven't given up on that. And one of her latest books, maybe the latest, is Out on a Leash, which, of course, was co-written by her dog. And, again, very nice literary style on the dog's side, and not bad for Shirley either. So there's those kinds of things. There's T-shirts from other animal organizations. There's cat toys, dog collars, etc. So if you're the first person to call in with the correct answer to this question, and later, when we play Name That Animal Tune, you'll have your choice also, likewise, similarly, of those very same prizes. All right, so, again, over-explained to the nth degree. Here we go. Okay, I'm already lost the actual question. I've written down the wrong one, but I will find it as I'm looking around here. And so it's 949-824-5824-949-UCI-KUCI. And speaking of March of the Penguins, I thought we'd do a penguin-related question. All right, true or false, all 18 species of penguin are found below the equator, primarily in the Antarctic Circle. Is that true or false? 949-824-5824-949-UCI-KUCI. All 18 species of penguin are found below the equator, primarily in the Antarctic Circle. All right, if you know that one, you know where to call us. And if you don't, you can also IM us that. We'll even, come on, how easy can we make it for you? Jeez, sort of a gimme almost. All right, so continuing with a, you know, fairly awful story, unfortunately, here that took from the LA Times Thursday. Headline, Rottweiler kills toddler at grandparents' home. Blanca Garcia was checking on her vacationing parents' dogs Tuesday night at their home in the Glendale Hills when she walked outside with her 16-month-old daughter, Cassandra. With the child in one arm, Garcia bent down to give a bowl of water to her parents, Rottweiler Inanno. Instantly, authorities said, the three-year-old dog attacked. The dog grabbed the girl out of Garcia's arms and dragged her several feet down the driveway. Hysterical Garcia wrestled the toddler from the 150-pound dog's jaws and ran for safety into her car into the driveway. Once inside, she realized that Cassandra was badly hurt. She put the child down, ran to the house, and called 911. She then darted back into the car. Police said when firefighters and police arrived 5 minutes later, they saw Nano sitting next to the driver's side of the car, apparently watching the girl. Cassandra was later pronounced dead at a nearby hospital. Quote, the mauling and injury sustained was horrific, said Glendale Police Sergeant Tom Lorenz, adding that the worst injuries were to her face and head. I've been here for 21 years, and we have received calls for dog bites and attacks, but never, I can't recall one like this, where a small child is mauled so severely and dies. You hear about it everywhere else, but not here. So, I think we don't need to go further with that, but again, fueling the ever-raging Rottweiler-slash-Pitbull, etc. debate. So let's have something soft and cuddly, then, that follows that, shall we? Okay. And it's local, to boot. So there is a little competition, talent show competition called Dog Days of Summers, and dogs of all shapes, sizes, and talents are being sought for the Fullerton Museum's 6th annual Dog Days of Summer. Competition set for this Thursday, August 11th. That will be held at the Outdoor Fullerton Market, located on Wilshire Avenue between Harvard Boulevard and Pomona Avenue. And the competitions and entertainment will be held from 5 to 8 p.m., and the market itself runs from 4 to 8:30 p.m. So you can sign up your dogs the day of the event, and the competitions are limited to 10 dogs per event. So also a variety of dog and pet-related groups and services will sponsor booths at the event. So I think that's it, and you can check with us at talkinganimals@AOL.com for more information on that. And let's try to hit one more story, because this is both local kind of and nutty. A California sea lion that probably swam in the waters of Newport Harbor was found Thursday in a city not known for its marine life, Irvine. The female sea lion was found at about 1 p.m. Thursday and was taken to the Pacific Marine Mammal Center in Laguna Beach, said Michelle Hunter, the Mammal Center's Director of Operations and Animal Care. The creature's likely route to Irvine was a long swim through the Back Bay and up the waters of San Diego Creek. Quote, I think that's the only way she could get where she was, Hunter said. The sea lion was captured in a ravine near Alton Parkway between Harvard Avenue and Jamboree Road, said Debbie Geary, Animal Services Supervisor for the Irvine Police Department. Quote, she kind of swam the wrong way, Geary said. And it goes on from there, but
she was going to Trader Joe's.
What's that?
She was going to Trader Joe's.
Right. Well, why wouldn't she? There's a bunch of great stuff there. And so she seems to be in good health and is, kind of resting and bulking up at the Pacific Marine Mammal Center. And then they will release her at a beach where they hope will be quiet and not too many folks there. So a cool story, and maybe that's a good one, given the mix of stories that often are part of the news here. To end things on for now, so if there are any news stories or announcements that you'd like to bring to our attention, please feel free to email us those items at talkinganimals@AOL.com. We'd also love to encourage you to email us with any comments about the show, suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs, comedy bits, any other animal topic that's on your mind. That email again is talkinganimals@aol.com. And I'm pleased to remind you, perhaps redundantly so, but why the heck not, about the Talking Animals website. We hope you'll check out the site. It's talkinganimals.net. Again, it's .net, folks. And sign up for the email list so we can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. You'll also find archives and synopses of all the shows, sorted photographs and articles both that we've written and various media types, including most recently the Orange County Register, have written about us. All kinds of links, other audio pieces, and more. So please stop by and take a look around the site. Again, it's talkinganimals.net. It's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which, as always, of course, involves animal-oriented comedy. And we selected this in part with Paul Watson in mind, a little bit of marine animal comedy, you can kind of say. This is Brian Regan with a piece called Fishing on TV on today's Comedy Corner here on KUCI.
I like watching fishing on TV. You ever? That'll make you worry about yourself. You ever watch fishing on TV for like 15 minutes and then just go, boy, I better get a life. I'm watching fishing. I'm not even fishing. I'm watching fishing. Too lazy to fish. I'm taping fishing to watch again later. Come on over. I got a fishing tape. No, a new one. And at the end of the fishing show, they roll credits. There are like 90 people involved with the two guys fishing. What are they all doing? And one of the credits is film editor. This poor guy. He's got to watch all the footage. It's not exciting enough to make it to that final show. That's got to be hell. He's got to sit there all day just going, no. 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 Fast forward, fast forward, fast forward. Oh. Mm-mm, no. That was just the worm when you put the worm. And I saw this credit at the end of the fishing show. I'm not making this up. Writer! I swear, there's a writer for the fishing show? What's he writing?
Ooh, she's a beauty.
He's typing it out. Guy's got to worry about his lines. Finally catches a fish. You have a line. Oh, it's a fish and it's a beauty. He's a beauty fish. Fish is beauty. He's a fish and a beauty fish. He's a fish and beauty fish. All right, cod. You okay, man? You need some water? Are you all right?
That was Brian Regan in the Comedy Corner with a piece called Fishing on TV. Comedy Corner is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. You are indeed listening to Talking Animals at KUCI 88.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at KUCI.org. Some of you out are listening that very way, and some of you, perhaps, arrived through our small website, talkinganimals.net. Before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed on Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. All right, earlier in the show I mentioned that our guest today is Paul Watson, a truly legendary figure in the animal world who co-founded Greenpeace, and went on to found the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. His lifelong activism defending all creatures of the sea has been recognized globally. In 2000, for instance, Time magazine named him one of the environmental heroes of the 20th century. Captain Watson's efforts to protect marine life have meant almost constant international travel, yet perhaps his chief concern remains the commercial seal hunt in his native Canada, the largest mass slaughter of marine mammals in the world. So there's lots to talk about. And hash out as we welcome Paul Watson to Talking Animals. Are you there, Captain Watson?
Yes, hello.
Hi, welcome. Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals. Sorry to kind of catch you, I guess, off guard on the cell phone, but we'll hope that the cell phone does us right.
Okay.
So anyways, probably unlikely that we can address, you know, some 35 years of activism in 20 minutes or so of conversation, but I hope to cover that, what we can, even if we all have to talk faster than normal. So I want to kind of step back to some of those earliest years first, and many of the folks I've spoken to on the show who've devoted their lives to protecting animals, much less have anything approaching your degree of commitment and passion, can point to a specific event or incident that served as a catalyst for their activism or galvanized the efforts that they'd already begun. I'm wondering if going back to, say, 75, one of the Greenpeace's initial campaigns to oppose whaling when you were tussling with the Soviet whaling fleet, if that provided such a moment?
Well, actually, I've been was involved when I was 10 years old, and what started me there was, I lived in eastern Canada in a wilderness area. And there was a beaver there that I was playing with every day when I was a kid. And the next summer when I went back, I couldn't find that beaver and asked questions, found out that trappers had taken all the beavers, and I became quite angry. And at the age of 11 on, I was walking the trap lines, releasing the animals and destroying the traps.
Sure. So an early activist was definitely born. But I guess I had thought maybe this was apocryphal, that incident that I was referring to where there was the harpooned sperm whale and that was unfortunately dying, and you guys made some sort of eye contact, and it just seemed like, at least I had gathered or heard or read over the years, that sort of further cemented your commitment sort of to protect whales and other sea creatures.
Absolutely. That was in June of 1975. We were off the northern coast of California, and we'd come up with this idea to put inflatable boats between the harpoons and the whales, and we thought that would prevent them from killing the whales because they'd risk killing a human being, but we found out that didn't work after about 25 minutes when they fired a harpoon over our head and it struck one of the whales in the pod, and that whale screamed, and the largest whale in the pod suddenly slapped the water with his tail and disappeared beneath the surface, and a few minutes later erupted from the ocean behind us, and I turned to see him hurl himself towards the harpooner on the Soviet vessel, but they were ready for him, and at point-blank range shot another harpoon into his head, and this whale screamed and fell back in the water, thrashing about, and I caught his eye as he was rolling about, and he then disappeared, and I saw a trail of bloody bubbles coming straight towards us, and the whale came up and out of the water at an angle over and above our inflatable, and the next move it would have been to crush us or seize us in his jaws, but I looked up into this eye, an eye the size of my fist, and what I saw there was understanding, that the whale understood what we were trying to do, because instead of coming forward and crushing us with a great deal of effort, the whale pushed himself back, and I saw his eye disappear beneath the sea, and he died, and that whale could have taken my life, chose not to do so, so I've always felt indebted to him for that.
Sure, sure, and just sounds like, again, one of those sort of pivotal moments. So, let me just tell this, and this is Talking Animals on KCR. We're speaking with Paul Watson, founder of Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, who is activism is on behalf of animals, especially those of the sea, is both lifelong and legendary. If you'd like to join the conversation, I have a question for Paul. The number is 949-824-5824. So one of the more longstanding and powerful storylines of the Paul Watson saga is your dogged efforts to protect seals and call international attention to the seal slaughter. And I know you and others don't even bother use the term seal hunt, that it's just, you just call it what it is, seal slaughter in your native Canada. Back in your Greenpeace days, wasn't it sort of interesting being informed by the new leadership that you weren't really to engage in another seal campaign that kind of figured prominently into your decision to leave Greenpeace and found the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society?
Well, back in 1977, there were a lot of power struggles within Greenpeace as it was getting bigger, and one of the when Pat Moore became president of Greenpeace, he used as an excuse to have me removed from the board the fact that I had pulled a seal club from a sealer's hand and threw it in the water, and he said that I had stolen the man's personal property and destroyed property, and that Greenpeace couldn't condone it. It was really just an excuse to get me off the board, but after that I decided to leave Greenpeace and set up my own organization, because I said to him, look, I was there to save seals, and if it meant going up and pulling another club out of a sealer's hand, then that's what I intended to do.
Sure. Sure, but it also sounds like it was kind of the riff was almost on a philosophical level, because didn't he also kind of wasn't there just increasing opposition to direct actions and other kinds of efforts at that point?
Yeah, I mean, Greenpeace was becoming corporate, and now it's become a major environmental company, really, with mm-hmm. that bringing in about $380 million a year. And once you start getting that big, then you're not really willing to take any risks anymore because there's too many jobs and too much property on the line.
Too much at stake, so, yeah. So, all right. Well, so back now, then let's time travel, I guess, into to 2005. It's the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, and maybe we can talk about the seal slaughter situation as of now. I mean, would it be fair to characterize this issue amongst the dozens, maybe hundreds that you've worked on as kind of closest to your heart?
Well, it is because, you know, being Canadian, I've always felt quite ashamed of the fact that Canada engages in this incredible slaughter of seals. It's the largest marine mammal slaughter in the world. This year, they killed in excess of 350,000. And I think their intent upon exterminating the species, and at this rate, they certainly will do that. They believe that if they kill off the seals, that the commercial fisheries like cod will be returned. Had nothing to do with the seals that they disappeared, but they're used scapegoating the seals. In fact, the reality is, from a biological point of view, if you look at it, the more seals, the more fish, because the biggest predator of codfish, for example, are the very fish that seals prey upon,
mm-hmm.
because seals don't eat codfish. So when you lower a seal population, you increase predatory fish populations, causing a further decline. But both politics guides the policies and not biology, unfortunately, in Canada.
Yeah. And can you talk a little bit more? I mean, you said unfortunately, some pretty horrible statistics. But, I mean, and has this kind of led to, I mean, there's one story of why there is the so-called seal hunt or slaughter. But, again, as you've already pointed out, it's sort of a specious argument to begin with. And so one of the results of that is this boycott of Canadian seafood. And maybe you could talk a little bit about that and specifically even how red lobster has become kind of a focal point.
Well, it's a completely subsidized hunt. It wouldn't exist without taxpayers' monies going in to support it. And so we decided that the only language that the Canadian government and the industry understand is profit and loss. So that's why we call it boycott of Canadian seafood products. If we can impact the seafood industry enough, then we'll be able to hopefully convince them to get out of the seal hunt. And one of the reasons we've targeted red lobster as a major purchaser of Canadian fish products is that if we can get red lobster to no longer buy Canadian fish, then it'll be a lot easier to get other companies. So far, though, we've got Whole Life Foods and Legal Foods and many other stores that have joined in the boycott of Canadian seafood.
So the idea is if that kicks in on a larger scale, including Red Lobster and others, then that will sort of then, you could sort of trace back that, hey, this is the impact this is happening. Maybe we need to really rethink the whole seal hunt. If you strip it down, is that the goal? Is that the thinking?
Yeah, to put economic pressure on Canada to end the seal hunt by making it, something that's hurting the economy of Canada. There is no really economic, reason to continue the seal hunt, but we're going to try and make sure that it's a loss to the Canadian economy overall.
And again, not necessarily upbeat talk, but a lot of stuff can't be. Aren't the seals that are slaughtered in this typically baby seals?
Yeah, they are. Canada tries to say they only kill adult seals, but the Canadian definition of an adult seal is anything over 3 weeks of age. So these seals that they're killing are between 4 and 5 weeks of age.
Oh my God, Captain Watson, looks like we might have a call from a listener. Would you like to take a call?
Certainly.
Okay. Hi, you're on the air live on KCI with Captain Paul Watson.
Mr. Watson, it's such an honor to talk to you. How come they can't get the legislation at least to get the age of a legitimate seal made older? I mean, I'm a Canadian, too, and I've been appalled about this for so many years. But isn't there anyone on the side of the seals that's in government in Canada?
Well, unfortunately, it's not considered something that people consider when they vote. So, and Newfoundland is putting heavy political pressure on to protect the seal hunt. There is some opposition from politicians in the in Western Canada, but they're starting to pay attention now. And the reason they're paying attention is because fishermen are complaining that they're losing money because of the boycott.
So I guess the best thing to do is keep this spread word about this boycott, then, huh?
Yeah, I think it's the most effective thing. One of the things that we're doing with Sea Shepherd is we have these stickers called Burke Breathitt, who does Opus the Penguin, you know, cartoons. He's done these stickers for us called Seal of Approval, and we're trying to get stores and restaurants to sign on to voluntarily say they're not going to buy Canadian seafood.
So once they do that, then Captain Watson, then they get this so-called Seal of Approval, and they display that, I guess, prominently?
Yes.
Great. Wow.
Thank you so much for everything you do. You're a true Canadian hero.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for the call. Hi, looks like we have another one. Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI with Captain Paul Watson.
Yes, I'd like to have a question for Mr. Watson.
Please.
Hello, Mr. Watson, you're one of my heroes. I, too, am Canadian. I'm ashamed of what Newfoundland has been doing for years. I was wondering, do you think it's a generational thing that there's a chance that with the younger people that they won't, they'll be less interested in pursuing the seal hunt? Do you think it will die out that way?
Well, I'm hoping so. In fact, it would have died out if it wasn't for the fact that the Canadian government keeps kicking money into it and encouraging people to go sealing. It would have died out on its own. But the Canadian government has been very aggressive in encouraging people to do it.
Okay, well, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for thanks for the call. Well, it sounds, unfortunately, really, other than obviously just kind of keeping, on this boycott and widening it out, that legislatively and otherwise, that there isn't much hope to alter this in the near future.
Well, I think that the boycott is our most powerful weapon on this. And, we'll be returning there again next year because when we return, at least it attracts media attention. There's other organizations like the Humane Society of the United States, that the International Fund for Animal Welfare that are involved in this, too. So the more organizations that are opposed to it, the better, the more pressure will be put on.
Sure. Well, I also want to remind listeners, too, that the website is seashepherd.org, and you can learn a lot more about the boycott, a lot more about the organization, and, not unimportantly, donate to the efforts that Captain Watson and all the others of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society are doing. So speaking of your next effort, I know you're in Florida now and about to shove off. Where to? Where is the next effort?
Well, we're just about to begin on a six-month voyage. The first part is to bring supplies to the Galapagos because we have a full-time patrol boat there working with the rangers to intervene against poaching activities. Then we'll be bringing supplies to the rangers on Malpelo Island, which is an offshore marine reserve off of Colombia. And then after that, we'll be crossing the Pacific to Australia to make preparations to go to the Antarctic to intercept the Japanese whaling fleet in December. They're killing whales illegally, violating the moratorium, killing whales in an Antarctic whale sanctuary. And so we're going to physically intervene. That is, if we have to damage their equipment and their ships to do it, we will do so because these people are breaking the law. And I've got a lot of support from members of Parliament in Australia about this, so I think we have to take an aggressive stand and enforce the law against them.
Sure. Well, that raises two questions. One that I was going to ask originally, and then I'll come back to the second one that you just reminded me of right there. But how do you decide where you or other ships that are part of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society go and when? Like, I mean, some periods of time, obviously, the seal hunt, that dictates when and where. But there seems like there's so many things that are of importance to you and others. I mean, is it ever difficult to resolve where to go or how you prioritize that? Is that a dilemma at all ever or...?
Well, there's certainly a lot of campaigns to choose from, but
right.
What we do is, can we make a difference? Is there a violation of international law? Those are the things that we look at.
Sure.
And along the way, we do quite a bit of confiscation of illegal long lines and pretty much don't even have to look for them. Anywhere we go, we'll run into them, and then we just confiscate them, take them out from the ocean, and destroy them.
Sure. And the thing that you said a moment ago that reminded me of a question I didn't necessarily have in mind, but when you talk about going up against the whalers as part of this voyage you're about to embark on, and damaging some of their equipment if need be, one of the many things I've found interesting in hearing you speak at various conferences and things is that sometimes different governments or people will arrest you, and it seems like, at least to hear you tell it, you're all too happy to, be arrested or, more to the point, fly back willingly to appear on charges. And there was at least one or two things at a recent conference where you were talking about where you couldn't wait to get back because you knew it would actually put heat on them. Maybe you could talk about an example or two of that, about how it actually kind of reverses and sort of helps what you're trying to do when these people do arrest you for such things.
Well, our biggest defense is the law. In fact, what we're doing is upholding the law. We're not breaking the law.
Mm-hmm.
And although I've been arrested many times, I've been acquitted. We've won in court. And so when we get into court, it's a chance to challenge them and to strengthen the laws that we're trying to uphold.
Sure.
For instance, when I intervened against drag trawlers off the Grand Banks in Newfoundland, I was arrested by Canada and brought into court. And my defense was that, yes, we did it. We're proud to have done it. We're going to do it again. And we did it by virtue of the United Nations World Charter for Nature, which allows us to do it. Well, Canada brought in an expert law professor from the University of Toronto to argue that the World Charter for Nature had no applicability in Canadian law. And the judge said, well, did Canada sign this? And she said, yes, but Canada signs a lot of international treaties that we don't really, you know, enforce. And the judge says, well, I'm sorry, but if Canada signed it, I'm going to recognize it as the law. So what that did was give a precedent for the use of the World Charter for Nature in a Canadian law court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it seemed like there's been other things that you spoke about recently where, you know, by proceeding with charges against you, they realized that, yeah, they would be calling attention to their own illegal activities. And, you, of course, you were all too happy, like, hey, here I am, put me in jail, or let's get underway with the hearings. And pretty soon they were kind of sputtering and saying, you know what, let's drop the charges against Captain Watson. Right?
Well, yeah, when we sank half of Iceland's whaling fleet and destroyed their whale processing plant, I flew to Reykjavik and demanded that they arrested me. And the next day they escorted me to the airport, and I said, well, I thought you were going to arrest me. And they said, well, we're sending you out of the country. Well, the Minister of Justice in Iceland stood up in the House of Parliament. He says, who does he think he is? He comes into our country and demands to be arrested. Get him out of here. Well, the reason being is they knew that to put me on trial would be to put themselves on trial for illegal whaling. Iceland was in violation of international law.
Right.
And so we may have broken Icelandic law to enforce international law, but I believe that international law takes precedence over the laws of nation states.
Absolutely. This is Talking Animals, and we're speaking with Paul Watson. You can, too, by calling 949-824-5824. And that kind of brings me into what you just said there about what happened in Iceland. I've heard you say a number of times that, you know, you think that we are a very stupid species and that you're sort of an anti-people person. And is it just, did you start off leaning in that direction, or is it just from years of dealing with these exact kind of people, whalers, seal hunters, people in Iceland, et cetera, that's kind of made you more and more anti-people?
Well, you know, I'm not really anti-people. I'm biocentric. That means I believe that all species are equal,
mm-hmm.
and that I believe in the laws of ecology, the law of diversity, the law of interdependence of species, the law of finite resources.
Yeah.
And I think that people are in violation of those three laws every day, and that until we bring ourselves into a situation where we're living in accordance to those laws and living in harmony with other species, then I'm really siding with those other species against my own.
Sure, absolutely. And kind of on what's probably a related note in terms of the us being a pretty stupid species, can you talk a little bit about what we as a species have done to deplete the world's fisheries?
Well, every single commercial fishery is in a state of collapse right now because of overfishing. And really, if you look at it this way, you know, we condemn Africans for going into the jungle and killing chimpanzees, mountain gorillas, and zebras, and we call it bushmeat. Well, that's exactly what the seafood industry is. It's bushmeat. Large sharks and swordfish and that are giant predators that are in the wild, and we're going out and killing them by the millions, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it can't be compared to, say, agriculture in any way. We're really looting nature's treasure chest. And without any regard for the interdependence of those species, our destruction of the cod, bringing it down to 1% of its original number, has so altered the ecosystems of the North West Atlantic that it's now going through a significant change with different species getting dominance. The cod will never return now because of the damage that we've done.
Yeah, there's just no way, right? No matter what were to happen today, there'd be no way for that to recover, right?
Well, no, their niche has been replaced by a more dominant species because their numbers have been so severely reduced they can't compete against those other species.
Right, right. And yet, and I know you pointed this out a number of times, but meanwhile, more technology, a more advanced technology to fish more and better keeps being introduced all the time.
Yeah, I mean, as fish populations are diminished, we invest more and more money into superior technology in order to extract them. It's a vicious circle because to get that technology means borrowing more and more money from banks.
Yeah.
And to pay off that debt means catching more and more fish. So it's an economic vicious circle with that the fish are really, you know, at the losing end of.
Yeah.
And not, of course, and also not not only that, seabirds, sea turtles, marine mammals are all being affected by this diminishment.
Sure, sure. No, it's the chain is so easy to follow, and sometimes the chain is kind of weird. Like I remember recently you were talking about some of your efforts in the Galapagos, and just kind of almost as a side note, but I just found it interesting too that you know, as the population sort of was surging in the Galapagos, the population of dogs and cats was surging in a way, you know, commensurate with that, even though I guess they're illegal there.
Yeah, we've been working with a group out of San Francisco called Animal Balance to spay and neuter dogs and cats in the Galapagos. Now, it's illegal to have dogs or cats there, but in the last year, we've spayed and neutered over 1,000 of them, and they're being brought in illegally. The other problem in the Galapagos is people think nobody really lives there, but the population has increased from about 5,000 people 10 years ago or 15 years ago to about 30,000 today.
Yeah.
And so people are moving in, they're bringing in their domestic animals, and I've always said if we can't save a place as unique and as wonderful as the Galapagos, I don't think we'll be able to save anything.
Yeah.
So for us, that's our line in the sand. That's why we're putting so much effort into it.
Sure.
We have a full-time patrol boat there, and we're trying to help the rangers, who are very committed. It's the government that that we have a problem with. I mean, we caught an admiral red-handed taking a bribe to support a fishery, had him court-martialed because of the evidence that we presented, and that made enemies of the Navy for us. So the Navy's out to get us, but we're working with the National Park, so it's a rather strange situation.
Right, so you're in a sense you're protected from what they're doing because of the alliance with the park system. Is that how that
works?
Yeah,
but we're not protected from harassment. We've got incredible harassment while we're working down there.
Constantly, no doubt. Yeah, and Captain Watson, we're just sort of about nearing the end of our time here. But what out of all these years and all these campaigns globally, I mean, is there one or two efforts or results that you could point to where you just say, well, you know, this is like kind of the most fulfilling or most satisfying, or especially maybe because we came up against the most formidable odds or whatever it might be, where you really think, wow, that one's right up there in my book?
Well, you know, all of our victories are temporary, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we shut down the seal hunt back in 1984, and then 10 years later was resurrected.
Mm-hmm.
We shut down all pirate whaling operations in the 80s, and in fact, for the most part, we shut those down in the North Atlantic, except for the Norwegians. We were successful. They came back again. So, you know, we win these victories, but they're temporary victories. But I think the satisfaction comes from knowing that you intervened and that thousands of whales or dolphins or seals have been saved because of those efforts. For instance,
sure,
last year my wife and another crew member dove into the bay at Taiji, Japan, and cut the nets and freed 15 dolphins. They did 3 weeks in jail for that. While awaiting, because it could hold you for 3 weeks maximum before they brought you to court.
Sure.
But the fact is that they were proud to have done it. I mean, the 3 weeks in jail is nothing to compared to the fact that those 15 dolphins are now alive because of their intervention.
Absolutely. And you know, again, it's the age-old phrase of making a difference, and you've been making a huge difference for years and years and years. And on that note, just kind of as a final question, just, you know, a lot of people find that people that do the kind of work that you do, the kind of that level of activism for that many years, can be, you know, at times at least exhausting, depressing, whatever. When you're not on the ship or headlong into a campaign, what do you do to either relax or recharge your batteries? Anything that might interest or surprise us that you do? Or,
well, fortunately, the work that I do, ranging from writing to captaining the vessel to direct intervention, all that, this is what I do all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually something I enjoy doing, so
yeah.
It's not really it doesn't take a lot out of me. It's
mm-hmm.
certainly, and I'm not inclined to get stressed out about it, so
yeah.
I don't have those problems, really.
Well, good. Well, we're lucky to have you, and Captain Paul Watson, it's been a real honor to speak with you. It's the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. Again, the website is seashepherd.org. Great information about everything from the boycott of Canadian seafood to other campaigns. And again, please go there if you've been listening and want to help out, and there's an easy way to donate to the organization. And again, thank you very, very much for your time, and good luck on your next efforts.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right, again, that was Paul Watson, Captain Paul Watson, really, from the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. And one more time, the website is seashepherd.org. I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine, streaming live on the internet at kuci.org. And it's time now to play Name That Animal Tune. Again, it's pretty much like any other Name That Tune you'd care to mention, except that in this version of the game, the tunes are always animal-related. So, if I'll play a little snippet of the song, if you recognize it and you want to call in, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, then you will have your choice of those fabulous prizes that we mentioned earlier in the show. All right, let's get started. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talk Animals on KUCI. Can you name that animal, too? Can anyone? 949-824-5824. 949-UCI-KUCI. I mean, the chorus. I mean, it's another gimme here. We're trying to give prizes away. What the heck? Sorry, your mic was on. Go ahead.
But don't make me guess. It wouldn't be pretty.
No? Okay. All right. Well, then... Besides, it would seem like kind of an inside setup if we had our...
I'd blow the curtain.
But here, while we're chatting and listening, tell us a little bit about your training to go on the air here at KUCI in the near future. What kind of show would you do, given the opportunity?
I would like to put forth a show on the politics of food, which sort of relates to what we've been talking about with Captain Watson.
Sure.
And so I'd like to do some interviews myself and have food news.
What would be an example of an issue or a guest that would be fit within the realm of your show?
Well, for instance, if I was talking to Paul Watson, I would ask him how this relates to our modern diet and what we can do, how it applies to, you know, what you see in the grocery store, how you can make different food choices in your daily life, so that it's not so abstract.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, that's cool. Well, we'll look forward to that maybe as soon as the fall, right? Maybe you'll...
Hopefully.
Right, cool. All right, Joy. Well, thanks for joining us, and we will look forward to that. It sounds like a really cool show. And all right. Well, if you're not going to guess now, we're going to pull the Name of the Animal tune out of the picture, and up goes our beloved Kinky. I'm Duncan Strauss. We're just about reaching the end of this week's edition of Talking Animals. I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed in the show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. I want to again thank our guest, Captain Paul Watson, for joining us on Talking Animals. One more time, his organization is the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, and the website, and it's really extraordinarily well-done website, I think, and just jam-packed with info, and again, obviously the guy's been doing amazing work for decades. So check that out when you have a chance. And send a couple bucks their way, will you? All right, thanks. I hope you join us next Monday, August 15th, when our guests will be Hershey and Trace. Not only adorable labs, but the only federally certified mold detection dogs in the U.S., which means that kind of like those dogs that have been in the news the last couple years that can... detect cancer in human patients by the specific aroma of their urine. These dogs have been trained to detect mold in homes and offices, and as you probably know, over the last decade, maybe two decades by now, mold is a huge, huge problem. I mean, health problem and other problem. And these guys are actually Orange County based, no less, and are the only two in the country that are certified to do this. So, and perhaps to help the interview along, they'll be joined by their human coworker, Jack Clausen. By the way, other great public affairs shows on KUCI include Just Today Alone, The Serena Sharp Show, which of course precedes Talking Animals. And at 5 p.m. we offer Counter Spin, followed at 5:30 by Planetary Radio with Matt Kaplan, and that's just Monday, folks. There's great public affairs programming and talk shows like this each weekday, 8 to 9 and 9 to 10 in the morning, then again from 5 to 6 in the afternoon. I also see a music show here called The Dead Air Zone. It's on KUCI Tuesdays from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's a wildly eclectic mix of music, covers, and comedy. Hope you'll check that out. And again, I want to really urge you to check out our website, talkinganimals.net. And when you get there, please sign up for our email list so we can alert you to guest bookings and other events and announcements. Also, I encourage you to email me with any comments, guest suggestions, ideas about show topics, songs, comedy bits, news stories, anything else you'd like to pass along at talkinganimals@AOL.com. I really look forward to hearing from you. No, I really do. I'm serious. I'm dead serious.
I think you're serious.
Yeah, exactly. I am serious. I don't want to look sincere and serious. Please stay tuned for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease, his great, great blues show here on KZI. And by the way, whether you're on KZI.org right now listening or not, next time you go there, which should be like, I don't know, 2 seconds from now, there's a very cool profile, a so-called spotlight on Jeff Scott and his long-running blues show here on KUCI, so check that out. Meanwhile, this has been Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. And as always, we're going to close things out here with an animal-related tune. This is Magnetic Fields with a song called Zebra on KUCI. We'll catch you next week on Talking Animals.
So we got married in Venice in June. So what? We circled the earth in a hot air balloon. So what? And the rest of our lives is one long honeymoon. Well, that doesn't mean we're in love. If you really loved me, you'd buy me a beautiful pearl. But you've already bought me all of the pearls in the world. So there's one thing I crave when my days become ho-hum and blah. I want a zebra. We've got so many tchotchkes, we've practically emptied the loo. In most of our palaces, there's hardly room to maneuver. Well, I shan't go to Bali today, I must stay home and hoover up to go. But that doesn't mean we're in love. If you really loved me, you'd buy me the Great Pyramid. Oh, I'm so forgetful, you already did. But there's one thing I need, if you won't think I'm greedy, my dear. Another zebra.